Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October 21st, 2011. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Tara Gardner, our guest co-host, our guest co-host, Alyssa Ray.
That's me. Hi.
Hi. And our control room trainee, Morgan Ahoff. Welcome, everyone. On today's program, in recognition and celebration of World Vegetarian Month, our feature interview is with the authors of a recently published book called Say No to Meat, the 411 on Ditching Meat and Going Veg. Amanda Strombaum and Stuart Rose will be with us on the show today to speak with us about some of the information detailed in their book, which covers the various reasons to get rid of the meat in your diet and is a practical guide for then taking you through the steps to follow a plant-based diet and lifestyle, including 35 really easy transitional recipes that eliminate the animal products. The book is an easy read and I think a perfect resource for especially younger people who want to know the facts and then get the guidance they need for making that transition. This interview will be coming up in about 33 minutes, so stay tuned for that. For our first main segment of the show, Alyssa is here today to present us a piece entitled Feminism and Speciesism, Exploitation of the Female Reproductive System. In this segment, Alyssa will be discussing with us how feminism is inextricably linked to animal rights issues. In animal agriculture, the miracle of motherhood is co-opted and perverted. Female cows, pigs, and chickens are seen as nothing more than reproductive machines. Alyssa will talk about the realities of gestation crates, rape racks, the dairy industry, and the interruption of the powerful mother-young bond when it comes to factory farming. So as we didn't have a live show last week, we haven't yet had a chance to recap our big Animal Voices Thanksgiving event that we hosted last Monday. And when I say big, I do mean big. We had 140 people attend, which was way more than I was expecting, and which also meant tons of delicious food, lots of clothes to share, as it was a clothing swap as well. And of course, many, many like-minded, compassionate, animal-loving individuals who were there to support Animal Voices as well as be involved in the community of people who preferred to enjoy their Thanksgiving holiday without the cruelty of animal killing, which was definitely not missed. So Tara and Alyssa, you were both there. You were helping with the potluck. Thank you very much for that. What were your overall impressions of the event?
Again, like you, I think I was just really impressed and overwhelmed with how many people kept streaming in the door. I was working the door that night and just was so thankful that there were so many wonderful, compassionate people that showed up to share the meal with us. There was so much food.
Amazing. And really great clothes too. I got this t-shirt that I'm wearing today there, and I got a couple pants. It was a wonderful event.
Definitely. A much needed in Vancouver. And I look forward to it happening again. Yes. Allison, thank you so much for hosting such an awesome event.
It was, and everybody loved it. Everybody kept saying, we need more of these. We need more of these.
No kidding. That's exactly why I wanted to have this event, because we haven't had a vegan Thanksgiving community event in a long time. And the last one that was organized was very well attended. Not as well as attended as ours was. We had so many people there. I couldn't expect that many people. We definitely need a bigger venue next time. And I just think that there's just really a need for, as I said, like-minded, compassionate individuals who don't want to have that dead turkey bird on their table as a centerpiece to share with family or whatever. You know, just to be able to go somewhere that doesn't have that aspect of it and just to be in an atmosphere where that's not a presence. And I think that was great. So.
And definitely it wasn't all vegans. Like it was maybe some vegan, vegetarian people bringing their whole family.
Which is wonderful too, because that spreads the compassion and shows people how good vegan food can be. So I want to say another huge thank you to all of our volunteers who came out on that evening and helped make it run as smoothly as it did with the influx of people there. I thought the tofurkey was great. There was lots to go around. So thank you to Turtle Island Foods for donating all the tofurkey for our event. We made lots of money on our raffle. So once again, thank you to raffle donors and to our guests who bought lots and lots of raffle prizes. And thanks again to our co-sponsors who helped advertise the event, Stop UBC Animal Research, Earth Save Canada, and Liberation BC. They are the recipients of part of the door proceeds. So I do hope we can do this again. Stay tuned for a similar Animal Voices event to take place hopefully in December. So after all the work from the potluck, I basically needed to sleep for a week and thus went on a mini vacation to Vancouver Island last week to see my family, which meant that I missed the Walk for Farm Animals in Vancouver that took place last weekend. And I was really, really sorry to miss this event for the first time in about 5 years. But Alyssa and Tara, you were both there, and I'd love to hear how it went, being that it is perhaps Vancouver's premier and most attended annual animal rights event.
Well, I arrived a bit late just as the march was taking place, and it was amazing. There were so many people. There was a band. The band really drew a lot of attention, and it made it really fun, and it got spectators, you know, really stopping in the streets and looking at us and wanting to find out more, and everybody was handing out information, so everybody that was curious got some info, so I loved it. I had a great time.
And I can't help but mention that it was planned months in advance of the Occupy Vancouver
yes.
event, which was the same day, same place, same time.
Mm-hmm.
I must admit I was a little bit nervous about the overlap. Just I worried a little bit that mm-hmm. people who were there for the Occupy event wouldn't understand why
yeah.
we were there. But we got a great reception,
mm-hmm.
and I think that is like that sort of crowd who understands oppression, exploitation, and is standing up and voicing their rights are the people that can understand our message and see that it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
That's what really inspired me, was that it was bigger than just the animals because we were there on that same day.
Yeah, yeah. Brian Vincent with Stop UBC Animal Research was handing out literature about UBC and the research that they were doing, and it was really well received, really well received. Everybody wanted to learn more and go to the website and took the literature, which is really hard, I find, when you're handing stuff out. So it was really
It's normally hard to get people to take stuff.
Yes.
But I guess they're in that mindset there.
Everybody was open-minded and wanting to learn more about just everything. So yeah, it was really nice.
I think that's great. And I want to mention, too, that there was about 75 people who attended, which is about what we normally have at these walks. Sometimes there's a bit more. Sometimes when it's raining, there's less.
Mm-hmm.
The weather held up, right?
Yeah, it was beautiful day.
So out of those 75 people, a total, and it's a running total, it's still not finalized, of about $12,000 was raised.
Oh, yes.
Which
yeah.
is crazy.
Just in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And there was
walks
happening all across
right.
North America.
The big one in Washington, D.C. with Gene Bauer, the founder of Farm Sanctuary. He was doing it that day, too.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, these proceeds all go to Farm Sanctuary, which
right.
is a farmed animal sanctuary that we featured on the show, actually, last time. It was last time. So that's just the working total for right now. So that's about $133 that was raised per person, which I think is amazing.
Mm-hmm. So amazing.
It's a great cause.
It's so fantastic that 75 people could raise that much money. It's just...
Definitely.
It's so awesome.
So speaking of raising money, in recognition of our biannual membership drive here on Co-op Radio, which is happening right now and goes until October 28th, I'd like to share with you now why I decided to join and get involved with Vancouver Cooperative Radio. I've been a proponent and supporter of community radio now for a very long time. I've always had a passion for communication and education to the masses and an interest to do so via methods of multimedia, especially including radio. I like the idea of being able to communicate across the airwaves and on the internet by voice, since I love to talk, and I never did think of myself photogenic enough to be on television, so that leaves us with radio. I have always been a supporter of grassroots efforts in communication and giving a chance for anyone with a voice to make that voice known by whatever means, media resources available to them, and that's where community radio comes in. Unlike the medium of the dominant commercial radio industry, community radio serves a public need that allows information to be dispersed that you will not find in the mainstream media. We here at Animal Voices strive to provide you with a diverse and informative package of programming on the issues facing the well-being of animals today that you're not going to typically find being broadcast in commercial media outlets. Often we present stories and perspectives by those who have worthwhile stories to tell, but who will often often be missed by the mainstream media or not given the attention they deserve. There isn't another radio program in the city or even on this side of the country that is dedicated solely to exploring and disseminating the rights of our fellow creatures, and even the ones that do exist are few and far between. I do feel that there is such a need for this type of radio program to exist, and here in Vancouver, we are gracious to have Co-op Radio to fill this need. So we hope that you do appreciate our programming and the mandate of our show, which is to give a voice for those who cannot speak for themselves, the animals. We are volunteers here at Co-op Radio and certainly on the Animal Voices show. Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-supported community radio station. Located in the heart of Vancouver's downtown east side, Co-op Radio is a voice for the voiceless that strives to provide a space for underrepresented and marginalized communities. One key thing to note here is that we do rely on donations and membership contributions from our listeners to keep the station running. Each collective of each radio program on CFRO has a responsibility to raise the money needed each year to keep their show on the air. So we can't really do this without you, and we hope you will give whatever you can to show your support for our program. I don't think that it has to be a large amount, because really every little bit helps. If 100 listeners right now each gave $5, for example, that's $500 right there, and that amount goes a long way. Or, of course, you can give more than that, be it $20, $50, $100 or more. Another easy option, which will also help a lot, is to take out an ongoing monthly sustaining membership. That is, you have whatever amount you wish regularly withdrawn from your bank account each month to go towards an ongoing membership. This is an especially good option to pursue if you would like to give a little bit each month. So if you did $5 per month, that amounts to $60 a year. Whether you decide to take an official membership out or just call it a donation, either way, your financial contribution, as long as you live in Canada, is eligible for a tax receipt. So it does help out with your taxes as well. Finally, I do encourage you to check out our past shows on our website, animalvoices.org, to read about and listen to some of the great segments we've featured. We really do try to provide a diverse range of rich programming on Animal Voices, and you will find everything from interviews with Farm Sanctuary's Jean Bauer to Eating Animals author Jonathan Safran Foer to Diet for New America's John Robbins and to The Cove's Rico Berry. Also, informative segments such as on baking without eggs to travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating to the truth about rodeos. We cover all kinds of animal issues, ranging from animals used in laboratory research to animals used in entertainment to animal hoarding to factory farming, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. We also cover a range of issues pertaining to the vegan lifestyle. Since living this lifestyle is the number one most important thing that you can do to help the animals. Really do check out our past shows on animalvoices.org, download our podcasts, and please enjoy. I do think that you will agree that we've got some really good stuff that we're presenting, and not only that, but it's important information on which to educate the public. Please do support our work, not only in spirit, but through a financial contribution as well, either by calling 604-684-8494 now, or by going to cooperadio.org to make an online donation or membership contribution there. So again, that's 604-684-8494. We have someone who will be answering the phones from now until a half hour after the show. And if the line is busy, please wait a bit and try again. Or you can just go to cooperadio.org to make your donation there. We thank you very much for your support. And Tara, I'm just going to ask you if you could answer the phones if someone calls while Alyssa's talking. Hadn't thought about that. So thank you very much for that. And now here's Alyssa with our events.
Hello, it's, yes, I have only 4 minutes here for three great events, so go! Thursday, October 27th, that's next Thursday, from 4:30 until 6, there's a public forum about UBC's animal research that's happening, I think it's on campus. It's at Green College Coach House, 6201 Cecil Green Park Road. More information is, of course, online if you Google, but I'll tell you what it's about. The tagline is Bringing the Collective Together, Non-Human Animals, Humans, and Practice at the University. This forum is a first in a series of events launched by UBC faculty to create a dialogue about the case of animals at the university. The other two in the series, this is the first, will be in February and March of next year. This presentation will focus on questions of ethics that interrogate habits of thought in the humanities and sciences in a 35-minute presentation by Rod Preece, political philosopher and well-respected Canadian scholar of animal rights. Concerned members of the public are encouraged to attend. Of course, Stop UBC Animal Research will have a strong presence at the event and will be meeting afterwards to socialize. The next event I'd like to mention is the Vegan Prom, something I'm very excited about. It is a chance for vegans, the vegan curious, and vegan allies to get dressed up, dance, and nibble the night away. With a buffet of finger foods, a cash bar, photo booth, raffle, and a way to leave anonymous notes for your secret vegan crushes, you're pretty much guaranteed to have a good time. Isn't that cute?
So cute. Oh, my gosh.
Tickets are on sale now at Carmivore. They are only $15, and they encourage people to snap up your tickets right away. You can find them at Carmivore, 610 Columbia Street in New Westminster, between Columbia and New West SkyTrains, and also Nice Shoes in Vancouver. It's at 3568 Fraser Street at 21st. And again, that's $15. It's cash only. This particular event is $19+, and it's only 2 weeks away. That's 14 days. I think most of us here have our dresses and are ready to party. I bought my ticket recently, so yes.
I'm volunteering.
Oh, excellent. And so for more information, visit the website veganpromyvr.com. And I have one final event for Sunday, October 30th. CATCA, which is Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals, a local group that was founded 23 years ago that works on animal rights, animal welfare, and animal conservation issues, is celebrating World Animal Day, which was October 4th, so it's a little delayed. Same month, though. This event is going to happen in New Westminster at the Centennial Community Center next to the Canada Games pool. What have they organized for us? Well, from 12 to 4, they have an event for kids. It's BC Children and Animal Art and Message Contest. They'll be exhibiting, like, basically children's arts, and they'll have an animal costume contest for kids. There will be free refreshments and veggie snacks. And if you want more information or you want to get involved, catcahelpanimals.org. That's CATCA, helpanimals.org, /80.html. Or you can email Erica at catcahelpanimals.org. That's E-R-I-C-K-A. And that is what I have for the events that are animal-friendly happening locally.
Thank you for that. So if you do have an animal or a vegetarian-related event that you would like to have announced on the show, you can send us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page.
You are listening to the Animal Voices, right? Shall I start that over? I wasn't actually on. You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Thank you, Morgan. We're not going to do our PRA. So
I don't get a little break then, do I?
No, so Alyssa, you're on again. Go ahead.
Oh, it's me. Okay, so today I'm presenting a piece on feminism and speciesism, how animals in animal agriculture are exploited for their reproductive systems. This has been an issue that I've been wanting to speak about for a while that I'm quite passionate about, but one that is, I guess, fairly new to me. I just want to give a couple disclaimers. First of all, I am not an academic. I have actually never taken a women's studies class. I'm a little bit nervous about, you know, theoretical feminists, I don't know, being concerned with certain words I'm using or something, but I'm very much kind of a quote-unquote layman who's just interested and passionate, and I have read some excellent books. So that's where I'm coming from. And how I kind of got interested in the issue is with dairy production, basically, just waking up to the fact that a cow's reproductive system, or that a cow has to be pregnant, and that these cows are mothers and they're lactating and they want to feed their babies, and that basically has broke my heart. And I found that out, I think, after I went vegan. So it's a new exploration for me, something I didn't understand as a vegetarian that I hope to expose to the public. So here's my shot at it. So first of all, what is feminism? I thought maybe I'm not an expert, but just from my understanding, feminism is about challenging and deconstructing the dominant paradigm's desire to control women, their minds, and their bodies. It's about refusing to be seen as mere objects of desire and reproduction. The only way for one group to have control is through oppressing another group. And of course, we live in a patriarchal society, and one cannot be in power without making sure someone is without power. Feminism seeks to elevate women from second-class status and bring about a balance of power, thus building a society based on egalitarian values. And of course, the forefront voice at this movement that that draws the connection between animal subjugation and the oppression of women is a woman, an academic named Carol J. Adams. She wrote a book called The Sexual Politics of Meat about just over 30 years ago, I think, and it was groundbreaking work that just kind of showed how women are insulted and called or seen as meat or just objects, objectified, and that promotes kind of a violent culture towards them, or, you know, when we can see animals as just beings without feelings, we can be violent towards them, and that's kind of how women are viewed. So it's been seen as sort of an insult to liken women to animals. But I want to kind of show the other side, and I think a lot of people are working to show that actually, you know, we shouldn't, calling someone an animal shouldn't be an insult, because animals have feelings and their own rights.
We're all animals.
Exactly. So there's a new book that Carol J. Adams and her associate Josephine Donovan have edited. It's a collection of essays called Animals and Women, Feminist Theoretical Explorations. And in it, there's just a whole bunch of essays about different issues relating to animals and women and how those issues intersect. There's so many ways I can't even begin to talk about all of them. I'm just going to focus today on animals' reproductive systems, but just a bit of an introduction. In the introduction to this book, I just wanted to say that so what they're proposing is that a new feminist theory must engage itself with the status and treatment of other animals. This position rejects a narrowly construed liberal feminism that pursues rights and opportunities only for women. Instead, it proposes a broader feminism, a radical cultural feminism, which provides an analysis of oppression and offers vision of liberation that extends well beyond the liberal equation, incorporating within it other life forms besides human beings. We believe that feminism is a transformative philosophy that embraces the amelioration of all life on Earth, for all life forms, for all natural entities. We believe that oppressions are interconnected. No one creature will be free until all are free from abuse, degradation, exploitation, pollution, and commercialization. Women and animals have shared these oppressions historically, and until the mentality of domination is ended in all its forms, these afflictions will continue. So I thought that summed up the idea nicely, and that rings really true with me. It does, some people, of course, accuse animal activists of just prioritizing animal issues above human issues or people-hating, but I think people need to understand that all these issues are interconnected. If you fight against one form of oppression, it works to expose all forms. And another just note that because calling women animals has been used as an insult, Carol Adams reminds us that drawing the link is not meant to dehumanize women. So I hope I'm not you know, insulting anyone by drawing these connections. I'm just trying to bring about a broader discussion. So, of course, there's this... now would be a good time to talk about what speciesism is. It's the assigning of different values or rights to beings on the basis of their species membership. The term is attributed to British psychologist Richard D. Ryder in 1973 to denote a prejudice against non-human animals based on physical differences that are given moral value. In 1975, he wrote, "I use the word speciesism to describe the widespread discrimination that is practiced by man against other species. Speciesism is discrimination, and like all discrimination, it overlooks or underestimates the similarities between the discriminator and those discriminated against." So, yes, this is the one difference, though, I guess, between speciesism and other forms of oppression, racism, the fight against homophobia or other forms of religious bigotry, is that this is not a fight that's fought from within. Non-human animals need our voices. So that would be one big difference. And of course, speciesism is deeply woven into most of human culture, and it's therefore almost invisible to most people. And yeah, basically, there's just two similar assumptions when I'm looking at feminism and speciesism between the way that women and animals in agriculture are viewed. They're viewed as objects, as property. Women are passed historically from their father to their husband as property, basically. They're seen as consumable, available for sexual consumption, always, you know, offering themselves, their bodies. In the media, we glorify women of a, you know, sexual maturity and a ripe breeding age. And then after that, they're considered spent, basically, in the eyes of media anyway. And of course, control of reproduction is one of the foundations of both speciesism and sexism. Reproductive rights is a big fight. And that brings me to what I'd like to kind of highlight a bit today. I want to talk first about certain practices in animal agriculture. So in meat, dairy, and egg production, specific females are repeatedly artificially inseminated in order to produce offspring for the system. When I'm talking about pig production or pig meat production, it's the gestation crate or sow stall that I'd like to talk about. It's a form of confinement for breeding sows in the factory farming system. So certain female pigs are bred for their ability to produce piglets. And what a gestation crate is a 7-foot by 2-foot metal enclosure barely larger than the sow herself. It's specifically designed to severely restrict her movement and thwart natural behaviors. The pigs are unable even to turn around. A breeding sow spends most of her reproductive life of 3 to 5 years confined within this crate. Beginning at just 7 months of age, she endures a continuous cycle of impregnation and birth, bearing more than 20 piglets per year. After about 3 litters, she is spent, deemed no longer profitable, and sent to slaughter. And in Canada, every year, more than 1 million sows are subject to this unbelievably cruel treatment. And such confinement, of course, causes a host of physical and psychological trauma. Piglets are given access to her teats through the bars, but the mother can't reach to groom or care for them. And, of course, all mammals share the desire to care for their young and, you know, groom their young, and they never get that chance. Some might disagree. Oh, but I see artificial insemination and that treatment as a sort of a rape, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about a bit now. Some workers in the meat, dairy, and egg industries have jobs which entail mimicking some of the stimulation normally provided by the male during sex, which I find utterly disturbing, and I think you would agree. It's interesting to hear how sexual response of these animals is described so mechanically. As long as the animals are seen as it rather than she, no one typically tends to bat an eye. Within the cow and pig industries, a tool that helps the insemination process is described as a rape rack. Really. It refers to the contraptions in which cows and pigs are restrained while they're forcibly inseminated. In the case of cows, a whole arm is inserted to deposit the sperm. There's a photo online, actually, of a man in the midst of that practice with the caption, "I'll give her some wine and send some flowers tomorrow." Can you believe that?
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that it's just, you know, just, just kind of makes me sick to the stomach.
Absolutely.
I find it unbelievable that the vast majority of humans, this kind of sexual exploitation is just par for the course. Rape is normalized. It's just seen as part of the industry, natural. Let's talk about dairy production now. That's something that's close to my heart, and I don't have terribly much time. I could talk about this forever. So the entire dairy industry is built around the exploitation of a cow's reproductive system. I would argue this is where the most egregious cruelty occurs. Like all animals, cows must bear young in order to produce milk. In a system based on profit and commodification, high milk outputs demand repeated forced impregnation. At just 2 months old, cows are inseminated. Like humans, cows are pregnant for 9 whole months. Not long after their calves are born, they're separated so that calves don't siphon off the human supply, which, of course, we have no biological need for. Milk is for babies. Mm-hmm. Male calves are killed at a very young age and sold as veal because they're useless to the industry, to the dairy industry. Females follow their mothers to become nothing more than milk machines. And at a quarter of their natural lifespan, after just 5 years or so, or maybe 3 to 4 calves, a cow in the dairy industry is considered spent and slaughtered. Usually that's what your hamburgers are made out of. When calves are taken from their mothers at such a young age, it causes a mother great distress, understandably. Mammals are instinctively desire to care and protect for their young, as I was saying. There's a saying, a peaceful prairie, a slogan that says, "Milk comes from a grieving mother," and that I feel is a feminist issue. And I think that women need to take note and see these creatures as our sisters. They want to nurse their young and care for their young just like we do. So we're all animals. And that's why I hope that sort of feminists wake up to this issue. And just to kind of, I could talk about chickens. I didn't really talk about them today. But basically, because we don't have a biological need for these products, it's basically just because we can. And it's a power relationship that needs to be exposed here. These creatures are seen as weak and vulnerable and different from us, so we milk them mercilessly. Basically I hope I sort of explored some issues there that will cause people to think a little and maybe broaden the struggle for animal rights activists to consider feminism, mm-hmm. and for feminists to consider animal rights, and just that it's all part of one big struggle against oppression.
Thank you for that. Yeah. You did a really great job at explaining all of the details. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So in news this week, Ohio police killed dozens of escaped exotic animals. An Ohio resident, Terry Thompson, owner of an animal farm, released all of his exotic animals and then committed suicide in what may have been a one last act of spite against neighbors and police. 56 animals were released in total, including 18 rare Bengal tigers, 17 lions, 3 leopards, 2 grizzly bears, a baboon, and 3 mountain lions and 2 monkeys. Officials are under orders to hunt and kill all of the animals. Thompson had repeated run-ins with the law, and his neighbors and the sheriff's office had received numerous complaints since 2004 about animals escaping into neighbors' property, and also said that Thompson had been charged over the years with animal cruelty, animal neglect, and allowing animals to roam. He had gotten out of federal prison just last month after serving a year for possession of unregistered guns. I find this absolutely horrifying that a man that, you know, had been neglectful to animals and, you know, was charged with animal cruelty was allowed animals. Like they kept allowing him to get more and more of these rare exotic animals. I mean, this is not a habitat. This is not, you know, the space for them to be in. And it's just so horrifying that that he was allowed these animals, and the fact that he was allowed so many is ridiculous. So hopefully something will come of this, and he's not allowed. Hopefully they put an end to the allowing of exotic animals in the U.S. altogether, because it's no place for them, in zoos or otherwise. And in other news, Canadian med schools end the use of live animals. Another two Canadian universities have agreed to stop using live animals in trauma medicine training courses, making the end of the practice completely in this country, according to the doctor-led animal rights group PCRM that has lobbied for the controversial change. Doctors and other trauma trainees in Quebec universities of Sherbrooke Hospital in Montreal have begun practicing on human-like computerized simulators instead of pigs and dogs, which I think this is a huge step in the right direction, and hopefully we will see more of this to come.
Thank you very much for that, Tara.
You're welcome.
So our feature interview today is with Amanda Strombaum and Stuart Rose. They are the authors of a new book giving you practical guidance on how to go vegetarian called Say No to Meat, the 411 on Ditching Meat and Going Veg. Amanda and Stuart come to us from just across the border in Seattle, Washington, where they are both actively involved with the Vegetarians of Washington nonprofit organization, which organizes a fantastic yearly Seattle Veg Fest, among many other events. Amanda is the president of Vegetarians of Washington and has been for the last 10 years, and Stuart is the vice president. Both longtime vegetarians, Amanda and Stuart's advice in this book provides valuable information on key issues and explains why going veg is a fun, smart, and delicious choice. Hello, Amanda and Stuart, and welcome to the Animal Voices show. Hello. Not working. Okay, so we're going to play a quick song while we're figuring this out. So I believe we do have our interviewees on the line. Hello, Amanda and Stuart. Welcome to the Animal Voices show. Oh, can't hear them. Okay, that is odd. Oh, okay. Let's try again. Hello there. Are you both there?
I'm here.
Stuart?
Yeah.
Excellent. Sorry about that. That was a little snafu on my part. So anyways, to get right into the interview, I just finished reading your new book, Say No to Meat, and it was a wonderful and fun read. I have to say, I found it to be a very accessible and easy to read book, and for those who are veg curious and perhaps have no idea how to proceed in exploring the vegetarian lifestyle. Would you say that this is the audience for the book, the veg curious, and why did you decide to write the book? What is it all about?
Yes, well, the audience for the book is anyone who's interested in learning more about a vegetarian lifestyle, and that would include people who are veg-curious, as well as people who are newly vegetarian and are finding that they have a lot of questions. And we really wrote the book for these people because we wanted to make it easy for them to find the answers that they need. So the book is arranged in a question and answer format so that you can just scroll through and find the questions that you have, the questions you have, and get the answers you need as quickly as possible. And it's really all about providing people with everything that they need, from why, all the different benefits of why to go vegetarian, to what is tofu, or you know, some of the specific ingredients that you might eat, what you need to make a balanced diet. And then there's also some recipes included in there as well.
So why should people say no to meat? You address these reasons in your book in various chapters, discussing health, animal, environmental, world, and spiritual matters. Let's start with the animal-based reasons as you speak of them in the book. We talk a lot about factory farming issues and the cruelties involved in the industry, but one basic question you answer in the book, which I think is very relevant, is why should I care about farm animals? So why should people even care about farm animals in the first place? What is your response to this?
Broadly speaking, there are two categories why people should care. One category is what factory farming is doing to the animals. And the other category is what it's doing to humans, the environment that we live in, and to our ethical and spiritual well-being. Now, when it comes to the animals, we don't equate humans and animals. An animal will never write poetry, and an animal will never construct a spaceship and fly to the moon, but that's not really the question. The question is, can an animal suffer, and can they suffer pain? And one of the tough questions we deal with in the book is, can animals indeed feel pain? And the answer is an unequivocal yes. Scientists have determined that animals can and do feel pain much the same way we do. Now, anyone who doubts this should ask themselves this basic question. If animals can't feel pain, then why do they test pain medication in animals? Of course they can feel pain. So one reason we should care is because they suffer. The And I'll go even beyond pain. Can animals be unhappy? And I'll say that they test antidepressants on animals as well. So we know that animals can be suffer pain and can be unhappy when circumstances warrant it. And this has been shown to go all the way down from higher mammals, like cows and pigs, all the way down to fish. The second reason why we should care about animals has to do with what it does to us when we subject an animal to suffering when it isn't necessary. Now, some people are under the misimpression that we need the animals, and it's us or them. And so they operate under a false paradigm. They say they feel sorry for the animals, but, you know, it's me or him, and I'm a human being, and I'm going to have to win. And while I have no problem personally about human beings considering themselves somewhat more important than animals, it's a false paradigm. Because it turns out what's bad for the animals is horrible for us. It's destroying our health. It's the number one cause, raising the 56 billion, that's billion with a B, 56 billion farm animals, nine times the human population, is the leading cause of an ecological destruction on both land and sea. Even the World Watch Institute and the World Bank claim that it's actually the number one cause of global warming. And the very hesitant UN even was forced to conclude in a report that raising livestock causes more global warming than all the cars, trains, planes, automobiles, ships, and boats in the world put together. So it's costing us a lot. And when we hurt another sensitive being, when we know it's not necessary, we devalue ourselves in our own light. It makes us, it forces us to put ourselves in a callous position, to force things out of our minds, to go into denial of reality just a little bit. And such things are never healthy.
Well, thank you for that very informative answer, Stuart. In the health chapter of your book, you address the question of whether or not our bodies are designed to eat meat. And I like your response to this, as it's very straightforward and logically based, and even comes with a little diagram to show exactly what a carnivore versus omnivore versus herbivore is. Can you tell us about carnivores, omnivores, and herbivores, and in comparison, what category human beings fit into?
Yeah, sure, I can cover that one. So carnivores, as we all know, are meat eaters, and omnivores are animals which can consume meat, animal products, or plant-based products. And herbivores are animals that consume only plant-based products. And when you look at the physiology of those three different types of animals, you'll find that we really have a lot more in common with the herbivores than we do with the carnivores or the omnivores. If you just think of the teeth of a cat, or a dog for that matter, and a cat is obviously a carnivore, a dog is an omnivore, their teeth are very different from ours. They're so much sharper. They can really grab an animal and rip it to shreds. If you think of yourself, could you imagine going out into a field and catching a cow with your fingernails? And trying to rip it with your teeth or your fingernails, I think you can see it's quite impossible. In fact, I don't think I could even catch a squirrel.
And I don't think I would even want to, which is even more so. You know that there's a saying, you know, put a baby beside a bunny rabbit and an apple, and which one does the baby want to eat, right?
Yeah.
The baby wants to pet the bunny rabbit.
Definitely. I can't imagine a baby wanting to eat a rabbit.
So the first part of your book explains many of the aspects of why one should go vegetarian, and the second part gives practical advice on how to do so, including 35 recipes at the end of the book that are really easy to incorporate into an omnivorous lifestyle. When a person is first making the transition to going vegetarian or vegan, what are the first steps that you suggest that they make in order to make this transition as easy as possible? Because, let's face it, most people want to do what's easy and the least inconvenient for them, and are apt to stay with something if it's easy for them to do. So what would you suggest for just beginners?
Well, I would suggest that the first thing they do is find, you know, one or two recipes that they really like the flavor of. Because I think it's really important, if you're going to start replacing things in your diet, to replace them with things that taste even better than the thing you dropped, so that you don't feel deprived. So just, you know, work on one day a week choosing a new recipe, and finding a recipe that you really love to make, that's easy for you to make, or something that you go out to a restaurant and find. You know, you might find that you just love bean burritos, or a Mexican, an Italian pasta primavera, or something like that. Those are easy meals to choose in restaurants that you probably already go to. So there's a lot of easy options out there for you. And the second point I would make is just don't be afraid about it. A lot of people really worry, oh, you know, if I just miss one meat meal, then maybe I won't get enough protein, or I won't get enough nutrients. You know, people have been living a vegetarian lifestyle, and a vegan lifestyle for that matter, for thousands of years in various different cultures, and they've really had no problems whatsoever. And in fact, the studies have shown that vegetarians on average live 13 years longer. So if people are worried about it, they don't need to worry at all.
So I love the recipes in your book. As I said, very easy, accessible to make. Some of them spaghetti with besto pesto sauce. And we've got here secret Swiss chard saute, veggie sloppy joes, south of the border vegetarian chili, Lucky Lee's tofu and vegetable stir fry. What are some of your favorite vegan foods to make, Stuart and Amanda?
Well, for me, the favorite vegan meals to make are the ones that are the easiest. And so,
like in your book. They're
exactly.
Fairly straightforward recipes. I like that.
In fact, those recipes are pretty much the meals that I make at home on a regular basis. So, you know, grabbing a can of beans, black beans, and a jar of tomato sauce and a few fresh veggies or frozen veggies if you don't have fresh ones to hand. And you can make a quick meal really easily. In fact, my son just went to college and he'd been surviving on, you know, various junk foods from the local grocery store. And he said finally he broke down and cooked himself some pasta and some... and bought a jar of tomato sauce and a can of beans and
he broke down to do that.
Well, broke down in terms of resisting having to cook. He didn't want to have
cooking
to cook.
Is fun. So
it
there's
is fun, and he's discovered that it's fun.
I know there's a lot of information on vegetarianism being passed around these days in the media, and a lot of it is contradictory. Why do you think this is, and how does a newbie know which information sources to trust?
Stuart, would you like to take that one?
Sure. The media will jump on any story that is counterintuitive in order to get your attention, in order to sell a magazine or a newspaper. So the old saying goes is that dog bites man is not news, but man bites dog is. And so lots of times it seems like there's lots of contradictory information out there, when really the media is over-amplifying their prominence. Often they're poorly done studies. Often they're not replicated. And they're, you know, often promoted for the purposes of sales, I'm afraid. There's a bit of indictment of the media that just has to happen here. The other thing is that industry promotes things to try to weaken the vegetarian message. There's a lot of that going on with regard to soy right now, and a lot of it is just a total fabrication. It's really, really scary. And then there's another part to it, too, in that there's, and this is really very disturbing, there's a false sense of political correctness in the media today, that there were two equal and legitimate sides to every story, even if the facts say otherwise. And so the media will seek out, no matter how hard they have to pump a search, someone who will deny the obvious, making it seem like both sides are equal. And this may be being fair to people, but it's not being fair to the facts. And so I think that this is one of the problems that postmodernist press has brought us, in that there's more of an emphasis on worrying about whether or not everybody has their say, or whether there's symmetry between different groups and equality, than the force of facts. And it's interesting because Al Gore writes about this and laments about it with respect to the global warming deniers.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So there are many benefits to transitioning to a plant-based diet, and you mentioned many of them in your book, including many specific health-related ones that I hadn't really thought of before. So to summarize, what are the benefits that people may get out of when going veg? What are some of the benefits that you would like to highlight to our listeners?
Well, I think some of the biggest benefits are the health benefits to your own personal health. I mean, many people say that they find they have more energy, that their acne clears up, that they have an easier time with managing their weight and things like that when they go vegetarian. And those are just some of the things that people feel right away when they first go, pretty, you know, within a few weeks of going vegetarian. Obviously, the longer-term benefits, like the reduction in heart disease and cancer and things, are things that you might not find out until much later in life. But also, of course, there's all the benefits to the animals. Every single time that you choose a meal that doesn't include animal products, you're helping to save the life of an animal. And so that's a real benefit that you can be conscious of with every meal. And you're also helping to save the environment. As Stuart mentioned, there's so many benefits to the environment in reducing our animal consumption, because animals use so much resources in our world. And so it makes everyone feel much better. There's also the aspect of global hunger. It takes 12 times the amount of grain to feed grain to a cow in order to produce 1 pound of beef in comparison to just eating that pound of grain in the first place. So you can feed 12 people from the food that you would have fed to an animal. And that's a huge benefit in terms of global hunger. It makes so much more food available to everyone if more people choose to eat vegetarian food.
I like what you say about how it makes people feel better, because you're listing all these benefits to your health, the environment, global hunger, and all that. And I think it just gives yourself a sense of happiness and well-being that you know that you're doing something good for the planet and the animals and your health. So to sum up, I would say it'll make you feel better. And I just think you live life just feeling like a joy that you would never have before, because you're living a vegetarian life.
Definitely.
So I want to thank you for coming on the show today, Amanda and Stuart, to speak to us on Going Vegetarian. To learn more, please get your copy of Say No to Meat, the 411 on Ditching Meat and Going Veg, which is available at bookstores. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So I just want to give you a reminder that we are in the midst of our biannual co-op radio membership drive, which runs until next Friday, October 28th. This is a perfect time for you to show your support for a community-based radio station and Animal Voices show by purchasing a membership to the Radio Society. So if you can call 604-684-8494 now, and we'll be taking calls for the next few minutes for donations. Next half hour.
Few minutes.
So next 30 minutes for donations. And if you prefer, you can go to cooperadio.org and click on Become a Member to make a secure donation. Please just make sure that you email us afterwards to let us know that you've donated online so that
we don't need that.
Oh,
sorry,
we don't
that.
Need that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just make sure you put on your donation that your favorite show is Animal Voices, and then we will benefit from that.
Awesome. Okay. And please be sure to tune in next week, same time and place, for next week's show, which is a surprise. And our song this week is If Our Last Interview has inspired you to go vegetarian, you might be finding yourself in the shoes of the person singing this song.
Which is called
Whole Foods Parking Lot Song by Fog and Smog.
Thank you, and remember to be kind to the animals.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie. These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know me. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got. Check out what I say. It happens every day. It's how we live on the west side of L.A. I'm riding slow in my Prius. All leather, tinted windows. You can't see us. Everybody's trying to park. You can feel the tension. I'm in electric mode. Can't even hear the engine. Just then I saw a spot open up. My time is perfect. I'm creeping up. But then this other dude tried to steal it, going the wrong way. Yo, man, I've had a long day. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. Yeah, I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie. These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know.
They don't know.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Real.
You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got.
Small.
Check out what I say. It happens every day.
Yeah.
It's how we live on the west side of L.A. Now I'm on the inside, looking at my list. Organic chicken, kale salad, and a lemon twist. Some girl in yoga pants is looking at me funny. I'm just trying to find a decent Pinot Noir for 120. Then I take it to the cheese counter, Humboldt Farm. We just ran out, sir. Really, dawg? Take it easy, man. I try to calm myself. I've been on edge ever since they took kombucha off the shelf. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Yeah.
I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot.
Really,
I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie.
Yeah.
These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know.
Not now,
it's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got.
That's right.
Check out what I say.
Yeah.
It happens every day. It's how we live on the west side of L.A.
Cactus Buster's on his iPhone talking to his friends, picking up some cayenne pepper for his master cleanse. You're the most annoying dude I've ever seen, brah. Could you please move? You're right in front of the quinoa. Damn, I'm about to check out. Pay my 80 bucks for six things and get the heck out. The express lane is moving hella slow. Man, these fools don't know. This shit is getting real.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
So real.
I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie.
That's right.
These fools with clipboards are looking at me
I
like
said
they
not right
it's
now.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Uh-huh.
You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got.
Yeah.
Check out what I say.
Yeah.
It happens every day.
That's right.
It's how we live on the west side of L.A.
It's getting...